There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Season 3, episode 56, Greg in studio, joined by Justin Paul, JP from New York. Justin, how are we doing today, my man?
Unbelievable. What a time to be in the sports world. We got playoff action everywhere. Unbelievable. We'll get into it, like I said. In terms of in New York here, unbelievable weather, golf game, keep grinding that down, staying out there in the hot New York days here. But just getting in the gym, obviously, still training into that offseason. Stuff's begun in the classroom here. We're kind of approaching finals week in the next 2 weeks. So workouts, classes, and golf in no particular order there for my favorites, but it is what it is. So how you been doing?
I've been good, man. The student lifestyle, man. I miss it. It's fantastic. But no, things are wild, man. The weather's turning. The golf courses are open. I got a few rounds this weekend booked, so I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm excited about it. But before we get into the pregame show, got to give our friends at Manscaped a shout out. So guys, go over to manscaped.com, check out the plethora of products that they have. The Lawnmower 4.0, the Weed Whacker 2.0. They now have a Weed Whacker targeted to you women. So the five females that listen to the podcast, make sure you head over to manscaped.com. Check out all the products over there. Use the code TDI for 20% off, free shipping. Guys, Manscaped, they're phenomenal. They've got just a great catalog beyond razors as well. So make sure you go check out manscaped.com and use the code TDI. Justin, yeah, life's been good. I mean, like you said, I mean, the playoffs in the NBA and NHL have just been absolutely, it's such a great viewing experience. I don't really understand the NBA schedule. We'll get into that when we get into the NBA. But obviously, the NHL is very easy to follow. You got four series on Monday, four series on Tuesday, four series on Wednesday, four series on Thursday. So it's just nice to get the day break. But just some NFL news before we get into it. There was some breaking news, too, in the NBA, which we'll get into for us Canadians. But Jalen Hurts signs a five-year, $255 million deal. He's now the highest paid player in the NFL. I know, Justin, you're an Eagles fan. How do you feel about that? I mean, Jalen Hurts really came onto the scene last year, was dominant. I know Eagles fans must be happy about this signing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, bring us to the Super Bowl and just his growth. I know that it was interesting being an Eagles fan. Wasn't thrilled with the draft pick when we took him. I mean, we had the whole Wentz situation going on, but you just weren't sure with him. And man, did he prove you wrong quick. Like even losing to the Bucks that last playoff run before this year, you just looked at that roster and Jalen Hurts' progression and you felt great about where we were heading, and he showed it this year. Phenomenal record through the regular season. I know we had a lighter schedule, but to go all the way to the Super Bowl and the performance they showed, this is a guy that you want to lock up long-term. In terms of the length and the payment, I mean, his highest paid player in NFL history, so not exactly a team friendly, but these QBs aren't going to be on team friendlies these days. You know what I mean? Like, we're not going to have many more Tom Brady's with their wife making $600 million, allowing them to take such team friendly contracts.
Exactly.
But I don't think this highest paid player is going to last long. I know Joe Burrow needs a contract, so we'll see how that goes. But being an Eagles fan, you get your QB locked up. And you just got to hope that he is him, which I believe he's him. And we just keep riding Jalen Hurts and he's going to take us to the promised land. I get that Super Bowl under his belt here. So I'm happy about it. I mean, again, these contracts are always going to look like this for QBs nowadays. So I'm very happy we got him locked up.
Absolutely. When the young guys come up and Trevor Lawrence too, in the next couple of years as well, what's his contract going to look like? I mean, probably going to be fairly big as well. So yeah, it's just the kind of the reality of finding a quarterback. But as an NFL franchise, once you've got your guy, you make sure you keep that guy because there's a lot of franchises out there that are looking for quarterbacks, and that's pretty much how the NFL goes. You either have a guy or you're looking for a guy. It's the most important position in sports. Exciting for Eagles fans for sure. But listen, go ahead.
Just to pivot off it, I mean, what's the thought process, do you think, when you see, like, Jalen Hurts signs this deal?
Yep.
I mean, I know Howie Roseman, the GM for the Eagles, paid Wentz, et cetera. So, like, you know he's willing to pay, but, like, for the Ravens, like, not even to, like, get after Lamar or anything here, like, Jalen Hurts is a rushing QB too. I mean, I think a lot of the narrative is like the Ravens don't want to pay Lamar, maybe because of injuries, etc. Like they don't want to sign him guaranteed deal, etc. Like Jalen Hurts is just as active as a runner. I mean, in a different way, maybe, but like Ravens don't want to, like, what I just don't understand the difference here in thought process for the two organizations, you know?
Yeah, it's not a good look for Lamar Jackson. It's a good point you bring that up because obviously he is without a contract right now, has not signed back with the Baltimore Ravens. And yeah, I mean, this is a guy that it doesn't sound like any other teams have really, you know, looked like they've had plenty of time to go in and say, listen, Lamar, here's our offer, you know, and he's going to be playing under the franchise tag. It sounds like if he doesn't sign that deal, But yeah, I mean, I don't know what's going on with this guy. It's like, I mean, it would be interesting to see what the offers have been. I'm not sure if those have been publicized, yeah. But is he worth more than Jalen Hurts? I mean, I would say he's not worth, you know, I would think a little bit less, but still in that $40 to $50 million a year. And doesn't seem like he's getting it. So that's going to be interesting. Obviously they brought in OBJ and we'll see if he signs back in Baltimore, but that's a scenario. It's a weird one, man. It's going to be awkward, for the remain until he signs for sure. But we've got a lot to get into this episode, Justin. In quarter one, we're going to talk about the NHL. In quarter two, we're going to talk about the NBA basketball playoffs. In quarter three, actually, we do have a halftime show, fill in the blank. And then in quarter three, we'll talk about the MLB, the marathon that goes on right now. And then in quarter four, we'll bring it home in the PGA Tour. But let's get into it, Justin. Before we get into the playoff series, there's been a few questionable hits to start off the playoffs, and I wanted to hear your takes on it. So Joe Pavelski was taking it wide into the corner, and Matt Dumba kind of blindsides him with a gigantic hit. Joe Pavelski out in the concussion protocol. And then Michael Bunting in game one of the Toronto Maple Leafs-Tampa Bay Lightning series. Really just a hard interference hit to the head on Eric Chernak. What are your thoughts on these hits? Obviously, there was discipline of Michael Bunting. He got three games, which we can get into as well. A very stiff penalty for the hit and no repercussion for the hit on Joel Pavelski.
So starting with Pavelski, that's a hit that when I first saw it, on first reaction, that hit looked like we might be me seeing a major suspension. I thought it looked like Dumba definitely went up with the hit, obviously meaning his body towards Pavelski's head. He elevated. Also looked like he may have left his feet. Upon replays, he didn't leave his feet. Yes, he was coming up, but he was in a very bent over approach backwards skating, which naturally you're building up with power through your legs. So like, I understand that component. It also looked like Pavelski got his shoulder rotated and that contact actually was shoulder on shoulder. For me, I kind of wanted to see the view from behind there, cause that's where Pavelski's head was, but all the replays show that got him in the shoulder. I hope Joe Pavelski is going to get healthy. I hope this isn't anything that's too serious long-term. I hope he could come back and he has no issues. That's the first thing first, same with Chernak. But just looking at the hit, all things healthy. But Joe Pavelski got rid of that puck. It wasn't that long after, and it almost looked like he just wasn't expecting this hit. But for Dumba, it wasn't a play where he hit a guy defenseless or anything like this. This is a guy that just had the puck. He backhanded on net. I looked at the replay a bunch of times. It wasn't that late. It was just a monster hit that Pavelski wasn't ready for. And again, I'm not sure the hit had to be laid like that, but you're talking about a playoff game. Like, nothing's coming free here. Again, hope he's healthy, but I don't think that hit was that dirty, even warranting an interference was closer than most people might think, in my opinion. What did you see?
Man, I totally agree with you. And I think it is the epitome of how much the game changes from the regular season to the playoffs. I mean, you don't see that hit being thrown in the regular season, but a guy like Matt Dumba loves to throw the hits. And a guy like Joe Pavelski, you're probably not expecting that big of a hit. You have 82 games of the year, you're not going to see that hit thrown. But you're in the playoffs, you're in a vulnerable position, you've got the puck in the corner, and you've got a defenseman who loves to hit, flies over. And like you said, I didn't really see it being that dirty. I know there was maybe a bit of whiplash, and I know, obviously, the health of Joe Pavelski, we wish him the best. We hope he returns. He's a key component to that Dallas Stars lineup. But I mean, I think the NHL got it right. I mean, you give him 2 minutes, probably just due to the optics of it. The refs didn't have an opportunity to check it out. You give him 2 minutes, and then after the game, there's no supplementary discipline because really, there wasn't anything wrong with it. It was just a massive hit. But the Michael Bunting hit, on the other hand, was pretty questionable. That's just something that you can't have happen. Michael Bunting obviously skating by Eric Chernak. Eric Chernak didn't even have the puck. Kind of clips him up high into the head. Chernak's been out. Obviously missed game two. Bunting served a 3-game suspension. I thought it was a greasy hit. I don't know. I mean, it's just a lapse of judgment in a fract. That's how fast hockey happens. You're skating by a guy and you decide to kind of throw your shoulder at him. It hits him in the head. He gets blindsided by it. A dumb decision by Michael Bunting, and it's going to cost him 3 games.
So, obviously I play the game of hockey. I play the game of hockey at a high level. I've played it my whole life. The aspect that I could see being argued in defense of Michael Bunting is what is popular in hockey called like pre-hit, pre-bump. It's been in the game forever. The top players did it. Forsberg was unbelievable at it. He blew guys up doing it. You're going for a puck. Before you both get there, the guy in front lays the shoulder into the defender coming to him, and you're able to get away with that interference type of play. That is, he's going to hit me, I'm going to engage to him, create some space, and go. So that's what I looked for when I was looking at the replay. Okay, am I looking at a hit where his pre-hit, his pre-bump got him in the head? You got to have a suspension, but why is it 3 games? Looking at this replay, this puck, first of all, was nowhere near where Bunting and they were not going to engage. They were the first ones out from the net front, but they were not getting to that puck. That puck ringed all the way around over the hash mark. Bunting was never in stick length away, was never a pre-bump to get to the puck. The second thing I look at that makes me just disgusted with it, as soon as Bunting laid the hit on him and Chernak went down, whatever, and this is a big tell, and I play the game, I've done it, we've all done it, when you know you're guilty, immediately threw his left arm out, like, what's going on with... You don't do that if you think you're making a clean play engaging the puck. If you watch the replay, Bunting lays the shoulder in them when they're not going to be engaging the puck whatsoever. And you could tell by Chernak, they ain't engaging the puck because he ain't expecting any contact. Gets it to the head, and Bunting gives the look around like, what did I just do?
Yeah.
Hey, no one called anything yet, brother. Like, go make your play. You might be getting away with this, and the replay will expose you later. But immediately showed he was guilty. It was to the chin. The puck was not there. That's a dirty play. And I think the 3-game suspension is looked at maybe a little harsh because we don't see that very often, quite honestly, in the playoffs. So a play like that, I'm going to be honest with you, I think 3 games was warranted because of the damage it done to Chernak. Obviously, he went down with an injury. It being to the head, and again, from what I see, it looked like intent, and it did look like a little bit of intent to hurt because that puck was not in their play, in my opinion. I don't know if you saw the same thing or how you viewed it, but I think that's the right decision, to be honest with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess it's kind of the new age. It's just oftentimes you don't see that type of discipline, especially for a guy who doesn't have a history of getting suspended. It was just, I think, at face value, just a little shocking in terms of the 3 games. But, you know, you can definitely see by, you know, okay, the fact that Chernak's going to miss who knows how many games, X amount of games, the hit to the head, obviously they're trying to take headshots out of the game, and just the fact that it was a complete interference, maybe intent to injure. So, you know, you compile and you package all of those things together, then 3 games seems very reasonable. Just, you know, at face value, it might have been a bit shocky. But yeah, 2 hits, obviously, that were questionable to get going. But let's get into the series here, Justin, because it's been incredible. A lot of tight series, a lot of back and forth, but we'll start things off with the Carolina Hurricanes and the New York Islanders. In game one, the Hurricanes get up to a 2-0 lead. The Islanders score, but in the third period, 2-1 going into the third, the Hurricanes really shut it down. Kind of that, I referenced it last episode with the David Ayers type defense. They just really shut things down, really made it you know, difficult for the Islanders to respond. And then in game two, absolutely back and forth. I mean, we were watching that game, and we've been in the Chalkboard app, by the way, folks. So if you're not watching hockey games or in the Chalkboard app, make sure you get in there and you know, give your 2 cents. But it was a back and forth game. Jesper Fast ends up ending end of the game in OT. So we've got Carolina up 2-0, heading to New York. How you feeling about this series? Anything surprise you so far, Justin?
So first thing first, the Chalkboard app, absolutely buzzing. For anyone listening that's already in the Chalkboard app, it's absolutely electric. Keep it going. Having a great time in there. Anyone not in it yet? Man, this is just a group talking hockey, all the big plays, all the big moments. Me and Greg are in there every night, so absolutely electric. I will lead off. Well, I'll give updates so everyone's aware. So in this series, I took Islanders in six. Greg's on Carolina in seven, just so everyone's up to date on this. And this is a series. Kane's up too, man. Like you said, they lock it down defensively really well. Islanders do the same. Sorokin's been playing exactly as expected. This is going to be low scoring the entire way. Could be biased, as we know. I just said I'm on Islanders, but I don't think Carolina up two is telling of how this series has gone. I think we have to talk about it here, game two. I'll turn it back to you for a second. What do you think of the OT winner? Did you see that? High stick is driving me nuts, being a guy who picked Islanders. Did you, like, I'm not alone here. No, what'd you see?
Yeah, it's a clear high stick. And I think the argument against it was that, the player, he kind of lifted his stick and the stick, went up and hit him in the face. But I think in the rule book, I saw Mike Johnson break it down fairly well. There's nothing in the rule book that says, how the stick hits him in the face. You have got to be in full control of your stick at all times. So it definitely shouldn't have been a call. Obviously, the reffing has been, skeptical across the entire entirety. And it will always be a topic of discussion when we're talking about the NHL playoffs. But like you said, heading back to New York, that rink is going to be absolutely buzzing. I don't know if this series is over yet. Antti Raanta's played fantastic. Interesting that they gave him the nod. But his numbers this season were fantastic. 19-3-3 in between the pipes this year. So he's been fantastic. Obviously last year was great between the playoffs. Freddie Anderson, that guy, what a tough, last 3-4 years he's had. But no, I don't think this thing's done yet, man.
And you know what? I completely agree with you. And like I said, I thought it was a high stick. It's a tough way to see it end. Just going back to Mayfield there, he definitely got high stick. That's definitely a call that's been made majority of the time in the NHL, let alone playoffs. Don't love how Mayfield went over to the ref mid-play. You're putting yourself out of position. Not a good look in the NHL in the playoffs. Yeah. Try to focus on the game. If it's not called, it's not called. Like you said, and I think that speaks a lot to the Hurricanes as a team. They're so good up and down the lineup. They're so good 5-on-5, and I think that's because of the coaching, man. Like, Rod Brind'Amour going with Raanta is indicative of how he coaches his team, man. He's going with the guys that are going to be playing the best hockey. And that's not just in net. Rant is the hot hand in net. He goes with them. That shows everyone else on the team, hey, if you're playing your best game, you're playing. I don't care what you're getting paid. I don't care how long you've been in the league. So it just makes this team better every day. The fact that it's performance-based, man. You can't go out there. You can't be lazy. You can't be soft. And Hurricanes up two is going to be tough. Like I said, I think it's been close. I could see Islanders winning both at home. I really can. That place is going to be a madhouse with those Islanders diehards. The series isn't over, but man, it would have been big time different if it was 1-1 going into New York, but what are you going to do? Hey, we'll see. It's going to be a tight one, I think, still.
Big time. It felt like the Islanders could have had game two. It felt like they were the better team, and it felt like they deserved that game, but obviously that wasn't the case. Kane's up two, heading to New York. That game three will be tonight. But let's move into the Boston Bruins Florida Panthers series, Justin. Obviously, you're going to have some biased takes from me being a Bruins fan. But the series tied 1-1, the Bruins, they looked flat in both games. Obviously, being without Patrice Bergeron, and it is announced, too, that it's not an illness he's dealing with. Patrice Bergeron's dealing with an elbow injury. It's interesting because people are saying, why was he playing down the stretch of the regular season? Well, it's interesting because his dad's dealing with cancer, and they played the final game in Montreal where his dad was able to go watch, so he wanted to play in front of his dad. Incredible story. It just speaks to the character of Patrice Bergeron. So he played that game. He's missed the first two games. I'm not sure if he flew with the team. I heard that he did not fly with the team, but anyway, it's going to be interesting because that guy is such a pivotal player for that top line. He gets Brad Marchand going, who has played well in the series. But it just kind of bumps everybody into a more comfortable position in the lineup. But they go in game one. They win game one. They get up 3-1, kind of shut things down. But game two was all Florida. Sam Bennett gets back in the lineup. He, I guarantee, made a huge difference for that team. He was all over pucks, causing turnovers, a ton of turnovers by the Boston Bruins. And they get dusted. And we got a 1-1 series heading down to Florida. Any key things that you've seen from this series so far, Justin?
No, I think you hit on most of them. Like you said, I don't think Boston's looked the dominant team. I mentioned it before we went into it. I have Bruins in six. You have Bruins in five. But for me, the big thing with Bruins in six was that I brought up the metrics before on the podcast prior. Like, they outperformed in the regular season. They were, everything was going right for them. And again, I don't think they're a weak team or anything like that. They're a great team. But you got to come down to earth. And when you play a playoff team like the Panthers, it's going to show that you overperformed if they're going to play a strong game like they have, and they have the talent and Tkachuk and Barkov and stuff. Like, this team is loaded. But for me, something that stands out just quickly about the Panthers is the decision to go back to Lyon. A phenomenal decision, obviously, and how he played in game two. But the decision to go back to him was showing and telling about what they think of Bobrovsky.
Yes.
and what they believe in with Lyon. So going back to Lyon looks great. I think he's going to keep rolling. Like I said, I do think the Bruins are the more talented side. I have him in six, and I don't think that's going to change much. But like I said, I think Panthers could still get another game. Maybe we see a game seven, but this Bruins team has the ability to turn it on. So yeah, I mean, not great start, but hey, a lot of series left.
It's really just one period for the Boston Bruins, tied 2-2 going into the third last game, and they really just let the game get away from them. Florida scores three goals, and they're missing the fearless leader and Patrice Bergeron, but I still think they've got the depth to get it done. I still think they win this series, but it's funny, it's been a long time since. I'm a Bruins fan. I try, obviously being in the sports media and doing a sports podcast and talking sports all the time, I try to be less biased. But when it comes down to the pure fandom of a team, it's crazy how much your blood boils. And like when your team, it's not going your way. I'm getting text messages from people, Montour is better than McAvoy. Like when they scored the sixth goal, like I'm furious. And it's just, it's fun. That's what you love about sports, is the emotion it brings out of you. But tied 1-1 heading to Florida. Game five will be tonight. So looking forward to that one. Let's move into the Toronto Maple Leafs and Tampa Bay Lightning. So obviously this is probably the highlighted series in the Eastern Conference right now, just due to the fact that we're Canadian, Justin. All we hear about in the Canadian media is the Toronto Maple Leafs taking on a team that's been to three straight cups, and in game one, it could not have gone worse for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Tampa Bay comes out, they get a quick one, they go up 3-0 in the first period, and Toronto kind of, they start the second, and you're like, okay, maybe there's a little bit of life here. Justin's posted in the Chalkboard app, it's +800 live for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They score two goals, it's a 3-2 game, and then they get into penalty trouble, end up getting absolutely dusted, lose 7-3, everybody's up in arms, but last night, obviously, we saw the huge response from the Toronto Maple Leafs. They come back. They come out flying. Mitch Marner draws a penalty 45 seconds into the game, scores on a slap shot, and they didn't look back. John Tavares, the captain of the team, scores a hat trick. Morgan Riley, four assists. It was the first game I've seen Morgan Riley play like that in a long, long time, jumping up in the rush, playing with a lot of confidence. The Toronto Maple Leafs are right back in that series, tied 1-1, heading down to Tampa Bay. What have you seen so far, my man?
Yeah, so first of all, the Toronto fan base. Oh my goodness, with this fan base, it is absolutely relentless. Anybody who is cheering for Tampa Bay Lightning that is not a Lightning fan is strictly cheering against the Toronto fan base. I don't know if these Toronto fans know this about everyone outside of Toronto. I really do believe they think they're the only ones watching NHL hockey are themselves in Toronto, but every fan base is cheering against you. I'm not sure if do you remember the show Tim and Sid? Sid Six Arrows now on Breakfast Television.
Yep.
The rant that he went on Breakfast Television, this is the number one Toronto morning show for news, etc. He is absolutely tearing this Leafs team apart on Breakfast Television for the news in Toronto.
Yep.
This fan base is unbelievable. And I haven't seen it yet, obviously from just happening, but there's definitely just knowing how Toronto fans are, There's two sides of this fandom. One, they're still saying right now that they're going to fail us. They're going to lose in five. They have no faith in their Leafs. They just trash them. And the other half of them are saying they're going to win the cup. They're back. They just hammered Tampa. Game one was a fluke. They're winning the cup. There's no in between. There's no realistic here. That's first things first. If any Leafs fans aren't aware of this, that's who's cheering against. That's why people are cheering against you. In terms of the play on the ice, that game one was riddled with penalties. And so was game two, quite honestly. I'm watching them. So I hope that we could see some more 5-on-5. And obviously refs got to call penalties when they are. But these 5-on-5 swings, if you've been watching, it's like 10 minutes of Toronto being in the Tampa zone, dominating play. Tampa goes down, scores. Then they have set 6 minutes of nonstop play in the O's. Like, these teams are so back and forth. I still like the Leafs here to win this series. I like what I've seen from them, quite honestly, especially even in the game one when they lost, like to come back 3-2. But again, the penalties made that game a blowout. Ryan O'Reilly is exactly what Dubas has been trying to trade for the last 3 years. Foligno wasn't it. He's done this every year. Like, Foligno was what he thought O'Reilly is now, but that's what he was hoping for. And they finally hit when they got O'Reilly. He is unbelievable right now.
Unreal.
Nylander and Tavares, like those three right now, when they're on the ice, they have had so much success that it's starting to look overwhelming. Like Stamkos's line, Point, Kucherov, those three guys are kind of the only thing right now that Tampa has going for them in terms of production, because right now the Leafs are rolling over the rest of the Tampa lineup. So obviously Hedman and Chernak being out were huge for that. But man, I still like Toronto here with the depth they have. And I think at that game two, I don't think that game two is showing that this series is going to be back and forth. I could be wrong. I know I'm on Toronto at five, but I think that was just the start of them rolling this Tampa team over.
For the first time in the last 6 years, I saw the Toronto Maple Leafs do what I'm not a Toronto fan by any means, but what I've thought they should be doing. So they score a quick goal. Fans are into it. Mark Giordano, veteran player, goes, you know what?
Yep.
I'm going to go out and look for a fight to keep these guys into it. We're going to start finishing hits. I saw Matthews throw three or four hits. Like, get involved physically. This is the playoffs. Go win battles. And I think their compete level was much higher. They played much better. You know, Tanner Janot and Shen had a great fight. It was a very emotion-filled game. And I expect this to be just a bloodbath of a series for the rest of it. And no team's going to, you know, kind of fold, but it's now best of five. I was happy for a response, because if Toronto would have lost that game, I mean, it would have been a big hill to climb, you know, heading back to Tampa Bay. So obviously, yep, great response, and Toronto fans are happy. But let's move into the final series in the Eastern Conference right now. The New Jersey Devils taking on the New York Rangers. It's been all New York Rangers, and I'm feeling like an absolute fool for expecting more to the New Jersey Devils, but this veteran team in the New York Rangers has just been fantastic. Back-to-back 5-1 road wins, just in dominant fashion. You've got the top guns just buzzing. How about Tarasenko and Kane just filling net? You know, they've been fantastic. Chris Kreider, a guy who really flies under the radar. You know, not a lot of people give Chris Kreider the flowers he deserves. And again, Shesterkin versus Banachek, a huge upper hand for the New York Rangers in between the pipes, but they've been dominant through the first two games, and I'm a little surprised. But how are you feeling about this one, Justin?
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong. I have Rangers in seven. You're on Devils in seven. We both have it going seven, correct?
Yeah.
So I mean, the series isn't over. I mean, I don't see Devils winning two in New York. You know, I said the series isn't over. The series is over.
I think the series is over.
I don't know they're winning any in New York. I had this conversation. I'll ask you. How many rinks, maybe Montreal, Boston Bruins, and MSG in the playoffs in terms of fan base and home ice? Like, this crowd is unbelievable. So I with the experience the Rangers players have, and you know what? I saw it online a little bit and people talking about it. I put up a predictions on TikTok there. I had New York Rangers and I had the question come, why is everyone on the New York Rangers? The Devils won the season series. I think it was 2-1. And I saw it talked about a little later on. It was an NHL veteran. I can't remember who it was, but they were asked about playoff speed and the jump from regular season to game one of playoffs. For young players who haven't played, and I'm talking about like the Jack Hughes, et cetera, the New York Jersey Devils roster as a whole being so young, this playoff speed, for any NHL fan knows it, is a huge jump. It is a huge jump, right? NHL regular season to NHL playoffs is a massive difference in the game of hockey. And this Rangers team had the experience. I mean, Kreider's played over 100 games. Kane's won a Stanley Cups, and he's played how many games? Zibanejad's played how many games? Panarin, like, these guys, this playoff speed is what they're waiting for in when they start an NHL season. For the Devils team, this is the first time they've seen this NHL speed, and you got thrown into the fire against a team that has multiple Stanley Cups, multiple Stanley Cup playoff experience, and a whole lot of talent. So for me, that couldn't have been a better example than going into game one here, where Rangers absolutely beat the wheels off them. Game two, you know what they just said? Hey, you guys think we're going to take a step back? No, we know what we're here for. We're here to win the Stanley Cup. We are going to jump all over you guys here in game two and not give you a breath. That's what it is to me. This is a series of experience versus inexperience, and the experience is showing how dominant they could be. So I think Rangers, I'd be shocked if they – there's no way they lose both in New York. I'll be shocked if they don't get it done in five or less.
Yeah, it's been completely dominated, and I kind of feel like a fool just you know, looking at it. And it's been, just like you said, experience has just kind of, you know, risen to the top and been the most important thing. And with the New Jersey Devils having little to none experience in the postseason, especially a lot of the key components to that roster, being their first playoff series. And we saw the Rangers going a nice run last year. And like you said, the two guys they brought in at the deadline with Patrick Kane and Valeri Tarasenko both have won cups. You know, they're both, yep, just have had experience and going on runs. So the Rangers look fantastic. I'll give a shout out to my good friend Johnny Deacon. He was in my ear for picking the Devils and was all over the New York Rangers and let me know about that last night. But listen, let's move out west. Obviously, it's been just a fantastic start, and we got a lot. Every single Western Conference series is now tied at one. And we'll start things off with the Minnesota Wild and Dallas Stars. This one took a wild turn in game two, but game one, Minnesota grits it out in double OT. Philip Gustafson stands on his head, 51 saves against the Dallas Stars. They win in double overtime. And then Minnesota in game two, Justin, decides, you know what? 51 saves may not have been good enough for us. We're going to go with Marc-Andre Fleury, which they said was the plan from the get-go. They're going to play both guys, but a little odd to me. And Dallas ends up winning 7-3. They hop on them early. And so now we've got a 1-1 series heading to Minnesota. What'd you feel about the decision by the Dallas Stars to switch from Philip Gustafson to Marc-Andre Fleury?
I have written down in our notes for a series prediction. I have Dallas in 7 officially. You have Dallas in 6. I said on that podcast, I have Dallas in 5 with an asterisk. 7 is my lock-in, depending on if Fleury goes or if Gustafson goes. I assumed it was Gustafson. I took Dallas in 7. Okay, Minnesota wins game one. This is what I'm expecting. It's going to be an absolute dogfight. We're going to have great goaltending. It's going to be a tight battle. Probably going to go the distance. Marc-Andre Fleury gets the nod in game two. What on earth are you doing? It's complete opposite of the theory of riding the hot hand. The hot hand just won you game one, and now you're flipping it over? That is absolutely insane to me. I don't know that there's much more to talk about than the fact to switch goalies, to be quite honest with you. This Dallas team has experience. They are an unbelievable team all regular season. They have talent up and down the lineup, and they play with a lot of depth in terms of their production and offensive creation. You can't throw the weaker goalie when you know who you have a proven hot goalie. Those are hot goalies are sometimes the golden tickets in playoff runs. And you flip to the guy who didn't just win game one, who's been sitting on the bench and who hasn't been the better guy. I mean, Roope Hintz and Heiskanen have been phenomenal for Dallas. They're a big part of them written down here as being the leaders here for Dallas so far. A goalie on my team, big stats guy for goalies, loves the advanced stats. He brought this to me just before playoffs, and he said that he went through the last number of years for NHL playoffs, and you don't go far in NHL playoffs unless you have a goalie in the top 15 for goals saved above expected. Gustafson's in that top 15. Fleury's nowhere near. Again, we you could beat a dead horse all you want, but this is strictly a decision of the goaltending. I mean, am I wrong? How could you start Fleury going forward? Do you disagree?
I'm a big advocate, Justin, and even when I played sports back in the day, and in junior hockey, like come playoff time, it's like if you get a win, you're going with that same group. Like you make minimal changes to that group, and that's kind of how it's been. Like if you're a guy looking on the outside and your team gets a dub, you're probably not going to get in the next game. Like that's kind of how it's been, especially if you're a fringe guy. If you're a fringe guy up in the stands, watching for your fourth line, third line. If those boys go out there and get a dub, you're not getting in the lineup. You stick with what's working until it doesn't, and then you maybe make some adjustments. But obviously, this was a predetermined notion by the Wild to go with Marc-Andre Fleury. Obviously just got battered and beaten in the media for making that decision. So obviously a bad one, but it's tied 1-1. We're heading back to Minnesota. I still am confident that Dallas is going to win this series, and I know you are as well. But let's move in to the Edmonton Oilers versus the Los Angeles Kings. And I mean, I think it's been a lot of what we expected. The Edmonton Oilers have been absolutely fantastic. And we got to give Leon Draisaitl his flowers. He is second all-time in points per game in the playoffs. Has just been phenomenal. It hasn't been the McDavid show. It has been the Leon Draisaitl show. In game one, Edmonton goes up 3-1. And, you're like, okay, this game's over. No, 10 minutes left in the third. They give up a goal. And then with 17 seconds left, tied 3-3, goes into overtime, and they take a bad penalty, go down 4-3, lose game one after dominating. But game two, obviously big response, ended up winning 4-2. It's tied 1-1, heading to LA, but it's been a really a Leon Draisaitl show. He's been fantastic. I think Edmonton has dictated play most of this series. Obviously, there may have been some bad penalty calls in game one, but you just can't let go of a 3-1 lead. We look at teams like Carolina and teams like Boston when they had those types of leads in their game ones. They knew how to close it out, shut things down defensively. Edmonton couldn't do that, but we're tied 1-1. It's been fun. Anything you got, Justin?
So I'm just looking at it as you were saying that. Leon Draisaitl, okay? You can't give enough flowers to this guy in the way he started. I'm going to ask you this question, and I want to know honestly because I understand both sides of it. So you pull up the Conn Smythe Trophy current odds for who's going to win the Conn Smythe Trophy. Obviously, Pasternak's one and Allmark's is three because Bruins being the big favorites to win the cup.
Yeah.
Connor McDavid's two.
Yeah.
Leon Draisaitl's 17th.
Get out of here.
17th.
Get right out now. Of here.
Is what I'm hearing, and I don't know, you might have to go jump on
what
this
are his
right
odds?
As we're speaking about it. 3,000.
What? Wow.
So what I'm asking you is this. It is... Because obviously Connor McDavid's looming, and if they're going to go win the Stanley Cup, which you need to do to win the Conn Smythe, is there any way Draisaitl outscores McDavid? I know he's doing it through two games, but is there any way he does it for the next 20? Like, I'm asking you that question because that's obviously indicative of what they're saying, that they don't believe it'll happen long term, but he's got quite the lead right now, and look what he did on the bad ankle. Look what he did on the bad ankle last year. He's healthy. What? I don't think it's that crazy to think that this guy could absolutely go bananas and win that thing. I don't know. What do you think?
It's a fantastic bet. I mean, this guy has been better in the playoffs. Like, there was a year when McDavid was injured and Draisaitl had them into an Oilers team on the back. I mean, this guy is an absolute gamer. He's a freak of nature, and he flies under the radar at times because of Connor McDavid and all the attention that Connor gets. But Leon Draisaitl is the second best player in the NHL. He's right there. Like, he's right there behind McDavid, and having those two on the same team is unbelievable. I love plus 3,000 for Leon Draisaitl to win the Conn Smythe. It's unbelievable odds.
Again, here's another thing to back it up. I mean, second best player in this current playoff, third best player all time in playoff history through 60 games. Fewest games to through 30 games. Sorry. Fewest games to 60 career playoff points. Ready? Wayne Gretzky won 26 games. Mario Lemieux, second, 34 games. Leon Draisaitl, third, 38 games. That's all time to 60 points, this guy. Connor McDavid, I think, is down at 5. Playoff points per game all time. Draisaitl's like 3. I mean, this guy's absolutely going bananas, and I just can't fathom why this would stop. That's what I don't understand.
For sure, and especially this series, because we look, and Connor McDavid only had 3 points against the Kings in their four games this year. He only has 1 point through two games in the playoffs. Draisaitl's been going off. It seems like the Deneau and Kopitar combo have a good feel for McDavid, and they make things very challenging on him. Yep. Seems like Leon Draisaitl is playing with a little bit more freedom and just has the upper hand on these guys. So it'll be interesting to see through these next 5 games. But I could see Leon really having a nice buffer in terms of points. But I think McDavid is going to find a game during this series where he goes and has a heyday.
And he's had those games. Again, I've watched every minute of the Oilers and Kings series. McDavid has had like 2 or 3 breakaways every game. Phenomenal 2-on-1s everywhere. He was hooked on a breakaway that gave them the 5-on-3. Connor McDavid is going to absolutely light up this playoffs. It's just not going in the moment. He's hit a post and he's an escape late and stuff like that. It's going to happen. But they get past the LA Kings, man. Like, I just don't see what's there in the West in terms of slowing down Draisaitl and McDavid's production. Like, Seattle Kraken with Grubauer, Abs with Gorgiev, Dallas Stars right now with Ottinger, like Vegas and Jets. Like, I just don't, like, that's who's next, right? Vegas and Jets. I'm almost certain of that for Edmonton. Like, I don't think Vegas or Jets have the ability to shut these two down. So We'll see. I mean, I like Orioles here. I think they could win this thing in five still. I really do. But every game's been close, so you can't lock that in. But that's still my prediction.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a few lapses here and there in different periods. The second period of game two and obviously the third period of game one. But let's move into Colorado and Seattle. And a shocking game one in Colorado where Seattle came out buzzing, end up winning 3-1. And then game two came out and shocked them as well, getting an early lead. The Avs battle back, and they're tied going back to Seattle. But you know what's evident to me, Justin, is the Colorado Avalanche, they're not the same team as they were, and they are missing guys like Nazem Kadri and Gabriel Landeskog. It looks like Josh Manson, who missed a lot of the season, he's back, he's rusty, but they are tied going back to Seattle. I do expect them to win this series, but they are not as scary as they were last year, that is for sure. And Seattle has been beyond impressive.
Yeah, I not much to add. I think you hit on the head. All I was going to say is I had Avs in six because of Kraken's depth. Like, that's what their team was, and people don't really see that because they don't get caught up in the superstars, so they don't watch a ton of Seattle. They had unbelievable expected goals percentage. This is a good team. The only thing I had was as you said, no Landeskog's a big deal, and the guys they lost. I mean, I think the only thing I could say about this is I think the expectation we had on the Avalanche, and I know they finished strong, was that I think we got spoiled with Tampa Bay Lightning the last few years, seeing how a team could just keep rolling into the Stanley Cup Finals. That's not how this usually goes in professional sports. Like, you lose guys and you take step backs because contracts. Tampa somehow didn't have to do that, but this it shows. Like, they were unbelievably deep last year, and that's what got them the cup. You can't do that every year. Do I think they'll win this series? I do. Can they make noise still in this playoffs? Absolutely. But I think you already hit on the head. Missing Landeskog and those guys is a big indicator here of why this series is 1-1.
Yeah, a little worrisome. But I think, you know, maybe we didn't give enough flowers to Seattle because they did have a great start to the season. And, you know, for a team that, you know, doesn't maybe have the megastars, they're deep and they play really hard. Let's move into that final series, the Winnipeg Jets versus the Golden Knights. The Winnipeg Jets, they made a statement in game one. I'm sorry, they came out flying. They win 5-1. Yeah. They limit the high-powered offense of the Vegas Golden Knights to 17 shots. Two shots in the third period when they were down. Obviously, we got the game last night. Vegas responds. Mark Stone, a couple goals. They respond 5-2. It'll be heading to Winnipeg, tied 1-1. Great series. A really fun one to watch. Anything out of that series, Justin, want to take note of?
Yeah, so for me, the few things with this series that stood out to me is Vegas is struggling with the goalie injuries they have and not having Thompson. I think that was a big part of game one and why this series might be close going forward. I think Vegas is by far the better team. I just think that's a big component for them is having to start Brossard in net. Second thing I noticed was how much of an X factor Mark Stone is. Again, he's a huge type of player that makes everyone around him better. That's something that is hard to quantify in statistics, but Bergeron's one of those guys. I think Mark Stone's one of those guys. He does everything well and he makes everyone else around him bigger. I think this is going to be a long series, like you said. The one thing that concerns me for Vegas, we've seen it with Carolina the last few years. This power play is not clicking phenomenally right now. They had a bunch of power plays last night. They didn't score on the power play in game one. Carolina lost last few playoffs with that their power play going dry. If Vegas could start clicking on the power play, I think they win last night by bigger than they did. But that's something to watch. I think if Jets either have their number or Vegas just isn't clicking, they could be keeping Jets in a lot of games. And when you keep teams in the NHL playoffs in games, doesn't go well for the long term of the series. So again, still expect Vegas to win the series, but Thompson being out in net and that power play are two things to keep an eye on for me for Vegas.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that's tied 1-1 heading to Winnipeg. Looking forward to that one. All right, Justin, let's move into quarter two here. And we got some NBA series to talk about. We won't talk about all of them in depth because I think a lot of them have been decided. A lot of them, really, there's not much worthy to talk about. But we'll start things off with the Philadelphia 76ers versus the Brooklyn Nets. I think this is going just as we predicted. It's a bit of a dusting. Yeah. We just look at these two rosters. Even, you know, on paper, there's just so much more talent on the Philadelphia 76ers roster. The Brooklyn Nets just don't have the depth or the talent to keep up with this Philadelphia 76ers team. They're up 3-0. Do you think they close it out in a sweeping fashion?
I do think they win in a sweep. I mean, Philly has a good defense. It's a little bit maybe underappreciated just because it's James Harden and Embiid. They're not necessarily known by some of the casual fans as unbelievable defensive players, but what I want to see from this playoffs with Philly closing out in four is how do they take this defense into the second round against a Celtics team that's phenomenal? Like, is this something where they're playing where you just got to defend Mikal Bridges? And how do they take this defense into round two? I think the rest is going to be massive. Embiid has had injury trouble the last few playoff runs. So I think sweeping is imperative for them. So yeah, not much to say, just the better team winning in the NBA. What's new?
For sure. And we look, it's just what a wild year it's been for the Brooklyn Nets. I mean, you know, obviously in the playoffs, but I mean, not long ago they had Kyrie and Kevin Durant, and now they're looking to get swept in the first round of the playoffs. The Boston Celtics versus Atlanta Hawks, the Celtics are up 2-0. I mean, both games have been, fairly easy for the Boston Celtics. I'm not sure. I don't know if the Atlanta Hawks can get one done, but I think, like we both said, I think the Celtics are going to walk through this one fairly easily.
I mean, yeah. Can they get one done, or can they keep a game within single digits? I mean, it's absolutely insane here, the difference in talent. I mean, if Boston is showing it right now, if they have that playoff switch, it looks like with that experience. So either way, I think everyone would agree this Celtics 76ers series is going to be phenomenal, and I can't wait for that because. Yeah, I think me and you are going to have a little bit of decisions to make here and maybe be tracking that on either side.
So yeah, we'll get a little friendly wager going on that for sure. But no, yeah. It's funny. It's kind of like we're just waiting for the second round in a couple of the series. But there are some series worth take note of, and this is one for sure. The Miami Heat versus the Milwaukee Bucks. So obviously we come out and Giannis gets injured early in game one. Miami holds on, takes down game one on the road in Milwaukee. Last game. I love this from the Milwaukee Bucks in game two. Down 0-1 without your superstar on Giannis, and they get a collective effort. Brooke Lopez is buzzing with 25 points. Chris Middleton plays well. Drew Holiday drops 26. Just a phenomenal effort. Pat Connaughton just goes off as well off the bench. Just a great team effort. They blow the Miami Heat out. They're heading to Miami tied 1-1. Hopefully Giannis gets healthy. This would be a very massive upset in the NBA. I don't think it happens. I think Giannis gets back in the mix. But anything to note from that series, Justin?
No, I mean, I think the one thing to note is Giannis's injury. The one thing that I'm not on that everyone else is on is that, yes, I think he'll come back, but coming back healthy, that's one. Two, staying healthy. That's the big thing for me. Like, these injuries, for one, they're probably going to beat the Heat, and they probably know that. And this Bucks team has been phenomenal without Giannis when they had time to prepare. So I know Giannis going out mid games a lot different, but when they had time to prepare between games, they still showed how unbelievable they are with the team they have around Giannis. But my trouble is Giannis being nagged with injuries the rest of the playoffs. That's what stands out to me, because this isn't a conversation about the Miami Heat and the Bucks. This is a conversation about the Bucks and who they have to play going deeper. So I don't like that. I don't like that for Giannis. I don't like that for the Bucks. And if I were the Bucks, I'd be pretty worried about Giannis' health when it comes down to the matchups that are going to test the Bucks a lot more. So we'll see going forward. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll move into the Cleveland Cavaliers versus the New York Knicks. All tied at one. I think it goes a little under the radar. That signing of Jalen Brunson in the summer for the New York Knicks, just been phenomenal. That guy doesn't get enough flowers. He is such a phenomenal basketball player. He has a great game in game one. The Knicks end up winning. The Cavs beat the wheels off of the Knicks in game two. Tied 1-1. I think we both have this series going seven games. I'm on the Cavs. You're on the Knicks. Heading to New York. Anything to add, Justin?
No, I mean, I think it's going to be one where it's going to go the distance. What I kind of see with this one, with those teams being so close, is I think it's going to be a coaching chess match. And then what I mean is I think it's going to be adjustment made. Okay, you guys got the better of us. Adjustment made. They maybe like Knicks bounce back next game. Yep. And I think that's what it's going to be. It's going to be a lot of adjustments. I think both teams are pretty evenly matched. So, like, yeah, I don't think either of us have the upper hand. I guess Cavs, because of the win the last game, maybe they have something figured out, but I think they split again on the road. I mean, if Cleveland wins both games at home, it's over. But I think it's going to be. I think this one's going to go the distance. I really think this is going to go seven.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving out west, the Denver Nuggets versus the Minnesota Timberwolves. We know the Denver Nuggets, the cream of the crop, first place in the Western Conference, taking on a team We saw a little dysfunction going on before the playoffs. Denver's up 2-0. Jamal Murray, Canadian boy, a little 40-piece nugget meal. I don't even know if you can get a 40-piece anymore in the United States. You used to be able to, or at 20 at least. But a little 40-piece in game two. They're up 2-0, heading to Minnesota. Is there any chance Minnesota gets back in this series, or is this just an absolute wash?
No, this is a wash. Denver's by far the better team. I think what gets mistaken here and forgot about is Jamal Murray was hurt the last playoff runs that the Nuggets have been on. Like, this guy's an all-star. This guy's an absolute superstar. We've seen him do it in the playoffs as well. The playoffs, he was healthy. He was an absolute stud for them.
Yeah.
Like, Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic that Denver Nuggets team has duo. Two all-stars.
Yeah.
And what gets forgotten in all this is Michael Porter Jr., who I remember when he got drafted, he had that injury around the draft, so he didn't play his rookie year, I believe. But this guy was considered one of the steals of the draft, but it was because Denver was able to take on a rookie with an injury and wait on him. Man, is that paying dividends? Because that's the number three with Aaron Gordon. Like, people don't watch enough of the Denver Nuggets, I don't think, to understand that, like, they have stars on this team. This isn't just a team that's like, oh, we have Jokic and then some depth around. No, this team is built to win. And I, like I said, I think they get it done. We'll see moving forward, but this series is over.
And you know, for a fact, Jamal Murray, man, that guy's got stones. I mean, to be able to go on Instagram live and show your girlfriend, you know, that's just, it's, you know, he's got, you know, he's got that dog in him. We'll put it that way. Moving on into the Golden State Warriors, Sacramento Kings series. This one was surprising. Obviously Sacramento came out and it's gone this way all season long for the Golden State Warriors. The second worst road record in the NBA, only behind the Pistons. And they lose both games in Sacramento. That building was buzzing. But they get one last night. Steph Curry, 36 points. That series tied 2-1. But if they're banking on, they're going to have to get one in Sacramento, clearly, to win this series. But, man, what a surprising turn it has been. And obviously, we'll note that Draymond Green suspended one game for stomping Sabonis in the chest. I'll hesitate to say stomping. It was kind of just a light step. Regardless, it's been an odd season for Draymond Green suckering teammates and starting his podcast ranting on that. Golden State down 2-1. Anything to note on that, Justin?
So I mean, obviously you mentioned it, can't win on the road. It's been the story of the whole season, but Draymond Green, this is what is interesting to me. JJ Redick talked about it, and he was talking about how he kind of sees the Sacramento Kings playing a strategy of getting under Draymond's skin and having some dirty plays happen at Draymond to kind of entice him to make some bad decisions, which they did, and he gets suspended. I have two things to this. One, I don't know, maybe that gets addressed and maybe we start seeing the Sacramento Kings called on a few more things when Draymond gets back. Two, Draymond Green, as good as he is defensively, and he's very good defensively, and as much of experience he brings in leadership, phenomenal. He isn't the player that he ain't dropping a triple-double every night. He isn't dropping 18, 11 assists and 10 rebounds. Like, this is a guy that's kind of been for the whole season, like 8 points, four assists, like six rebounds. Like, I know him being out is a big name. It's a big leadership, obviously, what he's done through his career. But this Golden State team is built with, I believe, Curry, Jordan Poole, and Andrew Wiggins. So, I mean, those are the three for me that if one of those go out, that's a big series changer. I think Golden State wins game two at home. I think it's going to be a 2-2 series. You have Golden State in six, I believe. That's what I got down. I think that's right. And, yeah, man, I think that might be exactly what happens here, because if they steal that game on the road in Sacramento, they come home winning three straight games, and they're playing Golden State for game six. I mean, again, I had them in five. I'm wrong, but I now start to lean towards your sixth pick might be right on the head.
Yeah, hopefully. Obviously, De'Aaron Fox has been phenomenal. It's just clutch. Yep. Hopefully Golden State. I do want to see Golden State move on, but what a surprising upset that would be if they can't get it done. Moving into the Lakers-Memphis Grizzlies series, tied at one. Obviously, a great game one from the Lakers to get an upset win on the road. And then Memphis ends up winning by just about 10 points to tie the game up. Dylan Brooks, obviously, in the media afterwards, beaking LeBron. I don't know how you feel about that. I've got some comments for that. But all tied up, heading back to L.A. I think this is actually right where the Lakers want to be. And I know you have the Lakers in seven. And I think I've got Memphis in six. So yep. I think, you know, I do want to see LeBron go on. And it does seem like the Lakers are playing with a little bit more jam. But I also want to give a shout-out to Austin Reeves. I mean, this guy went just clutch mode in game one. you know, was running down the court screaming, "I'm him," which I love to see. But what do you see? What do you see from the Lakers Grizzly series?
No, just to touch on Austin Reeves. What you got to be a special human being to walk to yell on a court with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, "I am him." That is just absolutely phenomenal by him.
Yeah.
Fun to see. Fun to see for sure. But in terms of the series, I have Lakers in seven. I made a video again on TikTok predicting the Western Conference. I had Lakers beating this Grizzlies team without Morant. I had them then beating the winner of Golden State and Sacramento, and then I had them losing to Denver. And I was getting word, if Lakers make the Western Conference Final, they ain't losing to Denver, yada, yada, yada. Man, I predicted this wrong. And anyone who's getting after them not losing to Denver, LeBron James can't be scoring 28 points or 12 rebounds and you lose to a team of the Grizzlies without Ja Morant. Like, that should not happen. That can't happen. Anthony Davis puts up 13 points. Jaren Jackson was the defensive player of the year, and I think this is underrated to this Grizzlies team. I for sure had it underrated myself in terms of looking at this series. If Ja Morant could come back to his form and this Grizzlies team could play a team game like they did around him in this game without him, this Lakers team, I'm not feeling so great about this pick. Like, they won game one. So that kind of tells me maybe Morant's injury is limiting him a lot more than what we were kind of led on to believe. Obviously now he's out, so it shows it. But if this Grizzlies team maybe found a rhythm here and they know how to shut down Davis and make LeBron and Reeves have to be what wins these games, I don't feel as good about the Lakers. I don't know what Morant's status is long term in this series. Like, that Xavier Tillman, second round pick, he's 24 years old. He drops 22 points, 13 rebounds. Maybe this Grizzlies team has a lot more in them that when Morant goes down, these guys are able to step up and show, hey, we got depth and then we're going to take it to him. You can't rule out LeBron, but again, we'll have to see what this goes down. This looks like it's going for the long run here.
Yeah, I'm excited for sure. And the Dylan Brooks comments and everything like that. No John Morant. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. It's going to be exciting. But just the final series in the NBA before the halftime show, Justin. We got the Phoenix Suns taking on the Los Angeles Clippers. Obviously, the Clippers win game one. Yep. Kawhi Leonard just absolutely goes off. Russell Westbrook comes clutch down the stretch. But the Suns win two straight games. It looks like Kawhi Leonard's injured. So for Clippers fans, I mean, Kawhi Leonard's out. Paul George is out. I just don't think you can stay competitive in this series without those two guys. So the Suns up 2-1, heading back to LA. Is there any reason you could see the Clippers coming back and winning this series?
The only reason would be if Kawhi and Paul George are able to come back. And it's a shame for me. They get Westbrook puts up 30, 12, and 8. Powell puts up 42. I guess I said it again in the preview. We talked about it here with how this team's built, but the injuries are going to limit them. Like I said, we both predicted that this is going to be a story of Clippers missing Paul George. Now they're missing Kawhi. You're not beating Booker, Durant, etc. without those guys. Kawhi pulled it off in game one, but even if Kawhi was healthy the rest of the way, I think that was going to be a situation where, yeah, Kawhi got it done in game one. I don't see it happening for seven. But yeah, without both of those guys, this is going to be done quick. If somehow miraculously they're both healthy, I could see Clippers winning this series. I just don't think that's the case. I think this is going to be a Suns team that they're just too talented. They're too talented to be missing Kawhi and Paul George, despite what you get from Westbrook and Powell. So it's unfortunate that the injuries have played such a factor in this series. But yeah, I mean, that's the story of the matter. If they can't be healthy, you're not going to win against the Suns.
Absolutely. I expect the Suns to close that out in the next, over the next week. But that's a long first half, folks. But obviously we had to dive into each series, see what was going on. But listen, let's move into the halftime show here, Justin. Yep. We've got some fill in the blanks and we've got some sports oriented fill in the blanks. I'll give you my first one here. Continue on the halftime show. You need a home run, bottom of the ninth, World Series. You can pick any MLB player. You're going with blank.
Jose Altuve.
Okay.
Jose Altuve, and here's why. I know Judge, Guerrero for the Jays. I know there's the home run hitters. Jose Altuve, 23 home runs in his playoff career. I don't know if anybody's aware of where that ranks. It's at the top. It's one of the top three, I believe, for a playoff career. Also, I remember 2019 watching that run. I believe he hit a game six walk-off to go to the World Series. Like, He's hit it. He's shown he's clutch. And you could hit home runs in the regular season, and then there's hitting home runs in the big moments. That's what this question is. I'm going Altuve. What do you have there? You're not going the same, I assume.
I'm going Aaron Judge. That's the chalk. That's the chalk. Do you want me to give you three?
Yeah, sure. Give me three. Okay. Yeah.
All right, this is an interesting one. Okay. You've got one-on-one man coverage. You're a defensive coordinator in the Super Bowl, fourth down, one-on-one versus Davante Adams. You want blank as your corner.
Richard Sherman. And I know he's not in the league, but don't test me. Don't test me. Come on, Richard Sherman.
With a sorry receiver like Davante Adams.
Don't test me with a sorry receiver like Davante. Richard Sherman, he's proven it. He wants that matchup, and that's what I want. If I had to go current, Jalen Ramsey won the Super Bowl. Unreal man-to-man. Again, he's got the length and everything. I'm going Richard Sherman, though. If I could have anyone, that's what I'm picking.
I like it. I like it. All right. So you got to go with three players here. You could pick any three NHL players, three-on-three overtime to win the cup. You're going with blank.
I'm going to be called crazy. I'm going McDavid, Draisaitl, and Ekholm. They're all on the same roster already, but that's what I'm doing. Dude, I don't think I'm going to get any pushback with McDavid and Drat. Best two players in the league right now. Give them 3-on-3 ace. They're absolutely scoring. And Ekholm is a big beast. He's going to be phenomenal for him on two-way in that 3-on-3. Those are the three I'm going for. He's got experience as well. McDavid, Drat, Ekholm. I think it's easy.
I like it. I like it. I like it.
All right, I got one for you.
Yeah.
Got one here first?
Yeah.
Okay. I got a couple, but I'll go with this one first. Okay. All right. Without Tiger Woods, you have a 6-foot putt to win the Masters on Sunday. Who do you want taking that putt?
Wow. This is interesting here. Okay, I'm going to go with the guy, Jordan Spieth. And I know that he missed a bunch of putts last week at the RBC Heritage. But this is a guy that has won at Augusta. And he is just a machine when it comes to the flat stick and clutch moments. So I'm going to go Jordan Spieth. I might get ripped apart for that answer, but I mean, I don't think statistically he like jumps off the page in regard to putting, but when that thing's hot, he doesn't miss. Scottie Scheffler probably would have been a nice pick as well, or even John Rahm.
But, all right, I got another one for you.
Yeah.
All right. Anyone all time, NHL shootout, team needs the win to go to the playoffs. Anyone in NHL history, who are you picking to take that shootout shot?
One name has just popped to mind, and I'm going with Pavel Datsyuk of the Detroit Red Wings. That guy's mitts were so silky. He knows how to just undress a goalie in any type of fashion. I'm going Pavel Datsyuk to score that goal.
I like that one a lot, actually. I really do. All right. I got one football one.
Okay.
All right. Any NFL running back all time, Seahawks fans, maybe tune out for this. You're on the 1-yard line to win the Super Bowl, fourth down. Who are you picking to run that football in, all-time running backs?
Wow. Do you go with Marshawn Lynch just to shove it in Seahawks fans' faces? Gosh, there have been some massive horses. You know what? I'm going to go with Derrick Henry. Just due to the fact his size I think he could just jump over the pile if he needed to. But I'll go Derrick Henry. But in case Derek was a little bit banged up and wasn't feeling himself, I'll go Marshawn Lynch. Pete Carroll, what were you thinking? All right, Justin. Hey,
how did I not go William Perry, the fridge for the Bears back in the
true,
day?
True, the fridge. No. Oh, man, Earl Campbell had size 34-inch legs. He could get one set of my jeans on each thigh. But listen, folks, let's move into to quarter three. We're going to get into the MLB just briefly here. We'll talk a little bit of golf here in quarter four. Just briefly here in the MLB, Justin, it sounds like the Oakland Athletics have purchased land in Vegas. It sounds like they will be relocating sometime in the next few years to Vegas. So Vegas continuing to garner Oakland franchises. It seems like this was the inevitable. I mean, you look at the Oakland Athletics Stadium, they get the worst fan attendance in the MLB, and Vegas, I mean, they are just a hot spot in regard to everything. So it sounds like Vegas will be getting a MLB baseball team here in the next few years.
Yeah, no brainer. I mean, this Oakland team's also 3-16. They've been at the bottom forever. My only hope is that, and he's showing it here, I guess, with Pershing Land. I hope when the ownership does get this team to Vegas, they start spending money. That's what I hope. I hope it's just not, hey, let's go to Vegas. Hopefully we get more fans, but we're still putting the same product out. hopefully they bring some people and they bring some players and they have some success. But yeah, I like the decision.
Yeah, absolutely. The Arizona Diamondbacks leading the juiced up NL West ahead of the Dodgers, ahead of the Padres. What is going on there? I mean, is this a team, Justin, that we should be kind of looking over the next 10, 15 games and betting against them? Or are you a believer that the Arizona Diamondbacks are for real this season?
So the Diamondbacks have a little bit of an interesting situation. They don't have a big lead. They don't have a big lead, which obviously being one is impressive through 20 games here, but they don't have a big lead. But I have some experience on this team. Gurriel Jr. has obviously been around. Marte, like, they have experience, so I'm not shocked that they're not, like, 3-16, like we mentioned, yeah, at Athletics, which I think a lot of people think of this Diamondbacks team. This isn't sustainable. I think it's sustainable to be just below 500 for a while, but in terms of winning the division, it's not sustainable. But I can't tell you that they're going to lose. Just so, like, I don't think they're going to go cold from here. I don't think they're a team that's going to have a massive losing record. It'll be a losing record, but I don't think you could safely say, hey, maybe we just fade them the rest of the way. They won't win the division, but I think this is more of a story of the Dodgers and Padres than the Diamondbacks, in my opinion.
Absolutely. But we'll move into the Padres. It sounds like they're going to get Tatis Jr. back here. In the next few days. Tatis Jr., obviously, what a roller coaster it's been for him. Riding on an ATV, getting injured, and then getting caught for sticking needles in his rear end. So it sounds like he'll be making a return. Is this going to be a big boost? I think it's going to take me a little time to figure out what this guy's got. It's been a long time since we've seen Fernando Tatis Jr. But I think he's going to be welcomed with open arms. I think he's going to add in a nice juice into the Padres roster.
First of all, phenomenal. Nothing you want more from a player when you sign him to a massive multi-$100 million deal than what he's been doing. So phenomenal by the Padres for that deal. That just looks phenomenal right now. So good for them. Next things next is they need him back. They're 10-11, 4-6 in the last 10 for the Padres. So not playing great baseball. Runs scored, their 25th. Hits, their 29th. Average, their 28th. This team needs the bat back in their lineup. Like I said, I think you hit it right in the head too. I know what he's done in the past. We'll see how well he gets equated back into the league and how long that takes. So it'll be interesting, man. That division is, like you said, wide open because the Padres are struggling. You don't know how Tatis will be. D-backs are leading, but then the Dodgers are right there. What a mess it is in that division there.
It is wild over there. Max Scherzer, interesting moment this week. He gets obviously goes for the routine check by the umpire to check his hand. The umpire doesn't like the amount of stickiness that was going on in Max Scherzer's hand. He gets ejected from the game. Max Scherzer was adamant that it was rosin. So rosin, obviously, you guys know, is the bag of legal kind of substance that pitchers can use while they pitch. Is Scherzer going to face some discipline for sticky stuff? It's interesting. It's an interesting case here.
Yeah, this is probably the most interesting news in the MLB right now. So the story goes that he came up for his check. He had a little bit of a sticky hand there, so he got told to wash it. It wasn't his throwing hand. I believe it was his left hand or his non-pitching hand, and they told him to wash his hand. So he comes back for his next check, hands washed, but in the glove, they found sticky. They tell him, go change your glove. Comes back next check. His hand's far too sticky. The umps, I don't know if it's, they're just mad at him at this point for now, trying to pull third time past him. They say it was so sticky to the point it's inconsistent with the rosin and sweat. Scherzer said what he did was legal. He got a 10-game suspension, which this guy's a starting pitcher in the MLB. It's one start. He got a one start suspension, which for me says two things. He didn't do anything that bad. If he's getting one start suspension.
Yeah.
And then two, it's like, if he didn't do anything that bad, what are we suspending him for? If it's legal, like, you got to think, I mean, if he used anything illegal, no matter how much he used, you got to think he's getting more than one start. Right. But then if it's not illegal, why is he getting anything? I don't know. MLB, some of these rules.
It's wild for sure. I mean, could you set, you know, precedent here with a guy like Max Scherzer, who's been a star in your league? Could you say, listen, Max, that's an 80-game suspension, you know? But I think, you know, obviously the 10-game suspension is just going to be one start. But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be difficult to prove that this is not rosin and sweat. Obviously, they don't think it is. But yeah, I mean, it continues to be a massive, massive, you know, just checking point for the umpires, you know, bringing the pitchers out and making sure they're not using substances on their hand. But yeah, we'll figure out, you know, I guess we'll learn more in his next few starts when he returns from suspension, Justin, if he continues to use sticky stuff or if he continues to try to pull a fast one on the umpires. But Jay's update. The bats are absolutely humming, man. Chapman off to a great start offensively, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. off to a great start. And so it's even Bo Bichette is they're all top, I think, 15 in batting average so far. And I think Matt Chapman he leads the league in OPS, if I'm not mistaken. So just off to a fantastic start, but their pitching has just been so inconsistent. Alec Manoah has not looked great this season. Obviously, we've seen Gausman show some ups and downs. Berrios had a great start, but then their bullpen came up and just gas canned the eighth inning. What have you seen from the Jays? If they can get their pitching back on track, I mean, this is the team that's probably going to be, you know, chasing down the Rays here very soon if they can get things all squared away in that rotation.
So far we're 19 games into the season, and me and you are already in the marathon roller coaster of being a Jays fan. I think we're going to be in it the whole season.
Yeah,
we started off by saying what's going on, and then the dominate for a while and they're 8-4 in the last podcast.
Yep.
Now we're sitting here and they're second last in their division. Yes, they have a winning record, but it's two things for me. And you hit on that is pitching for sure. They're bottom half in the league in every pitching stat. So obviously it's not clicking. Like you said, every starter is above a 3.6 ERA. If you take out Gausman, every starter is above 4 ERA. So you're not getting it from the pitching side of it. And then you said how great Bichette, Springer, Vladdy, and Chapman are, but we're not getting a whole lot outside those top four. Like, we're getting enough. We have a winning record, but I mean, hey, the teams that are ahead of us is because they have two things that we don't right now. They have depth up and down the batting order, and they have the pitching that's clicking better than we are. So, hey, we're going to say it all year. I think me and you, it's a marathon. We're only 19 games in, but yeah, like I think we both agree, there's still things that the Jays are leaving us desiring here through 20 games. So,
yeah,
and hey, we got Yankees for the next three here. That's massive. I mean, I know it's early, but every time we play them, it's always massive.
Huge game in Yankee Stadium coming up for the Jays. We just have some breaking news here. The NFL has suspended Jameson Williams, obviously a star young receiver for the Detroit Lions, 6 games for gambling. So we got Calvin Ridley 2.0 here. Jameson Williams, this young star that we didn't get to see much of for the Detroit Lions. Obviously a high draft pick a few years ago, will be suspended 6 games for gambling. So the boys, the NFL receivers, stay out of the old casinos, gentlemen. Anyway, hey, go ahead.
You know what? There's two quick things. I'll keep this quick.
Yep.
First things first is Calvin Ridley's got to be saying to himself, you told me that any gambling is a 1-year suspension. So he's got to be saying, how is this guy getting 6? Second of all, and we'll get into this more, I think, during the NFL season and maybe in the dog days of summer.
Yeah.
Fantasy football, big thing. I'm a big fantasy football guy. We're going to bring that element big time here. But
oh, yeah.
Jameson Williams was a rookie that came on big. And that's an offense in Detroit that had a lot of opportunity for a guy like Jameson Williams to dominate. A lot of people, dynasty leagues, et cetera, were fired up about Williams, and now you don't get him for the first 6, changes a lot of decisions made. So we'll touch on that later on. But yeah, that's big news, actually, for a lot of people.
Absolutely. Clayton Kershaw, just finally in the MLB, gets his 200th win, just a horse, a first ballot Hall of Famer. So congrats to Clayton Kershaw there. I thought I'd give him some flowers. Obviously, Dodgers pitcher there. Let's move into quarter four here, Justin. Let's get things closed out here in the PGA Tour, and we'll start things off. I sent the outline to Justin last night, and Justin's like, so we're going to talk golf and we're not going to mention Tiger Woods. And I'm like, dude, I'm such an idiot. So Tiger Woods goes under ankle fusion surgery. He'll be shut down most likely for the remainder of the year. It's been a long roller coaster for the modern day GOAT for golf fans. Obviously, you know, we could go on for, you know, an hour about, you know, what he's done for the game of golf and really still is the needle in golf. But it really sucks that Tiger is, you know, his body is, we'll go through his surgeries, but it'll be a miracle to see him compete ever again.
Yeah, it's sour. Honestly, like talking about this is sour. It's something where we've said it a million times, and I know he's come back and he's proven everyone wrong. Like me and Greg here aren't calling him out. We don't want him to be done. We don't want to play any narrative of like Tiger's done or try to run with that. Like, this is a concerned conversation, like, of two Tiger fans saying, like, man, you're a fan of him in the game of golf, and you cheer for him to play, you cheer for him to win. But from what he's given us over his career and watching golf and all the great moments, you feel for a guy and you almost think you know them, some of these athletes over the years. Like, I start to feel for him in terms of his body and what must be going through mentally with all these surgeries and how he's feeling. Like, I just want him to be healthy. I mean, maybe his next chapter is helping his kid Charlie, and that's what he does. Like, maybe more full time, and he can't play as much. But I just want whatever happens next to him be without these injuries and all these mental grinds and everything. I hope he could just find something where he could just be happy and figure out what's next for him. So yeah, hopefully the surgery goes well. Wishing him the best, obviously, with the. Anything that comes from it. So
I know, man. So let's just look at this. In 2008, he had two knee surgeries. 2015, he had two back surgeries, followed by a back fusion surgery in 2017. In 2019, obviously, he nearly lost his life in a car accident. It completely shattered his ankle and his lower leg. They had to completely reconstruct that. If you see Tiger Woods without his lower pant on, it's a lot of skin grafts, so it's a very discolored lower leg. It's just completely reconstructed. And then last week, undergoing an ankle fusion surgery. So you think this guy has just been through an absolute ringer and continues to try to come back and play golf. He loves the game. He's an absolute amazing character for the game of golf. He continues to be the needle. But like you said, Justin, I think at this point in Tiger's career, we're just happy to see him be happy. And if he doesn't come back and ever play golf again, I think he's given us enough to be satisfied. But Tiger Woods will be out on sideline for the foreseeable future. Last week was the RBC Heritage obviously the week after the Masters. It was an exciting tournament. We had Matthew Fitzpatrick and Jordan Spieth battling it out. Jordan Spieth looking to go back-to-back at Harbortown. Ends up losing to Matthew Fitzpatrick in a playoff. A big win for Matty Fitzpatrick. John Rahm actually hopped on the broadcast after he'd finished his round. Started commentating a little bit. It was phenomenal. What a great character. But it's crazy, these elevated events, that they made more money there than I've mentioned it, I think, in three straight podcasts. Made more money at this event than in the Masters, but a great tournament there, Justin.
Yeah, and good for Fitzpatrick, obviously. Great win. Jordan Spieth, okay, this putt to win, that thing was going center cup. Like, that thing, the view from behind the ball, this thing was falling center cup. And I don't know what on earth moved it back right that blew it past the hole. Spieth was ready to give the big celebration, everything. Ends up losing it on the next hole. But that ball was, I don't know, maybe I got to get my eyes checked. I thought that thing was center cup, and we were all signed, sealed, delivered for Spieth to go back to back.
Oh, he had the putter in the air, fist ready to be pumped, and it was running backwards, and it turned into a what just happened moment quickly. But it was an exciting one. Congrats on Matt Fitzpatrick. If you haven't watched the Full Swing on Netflix, it's a great episode on him. He's an absolute workhorse. This guy has recorded every single shot he's hit in a tournament in the since he was like 13. It's absolutely wild. I did want to note too, Justin, that it's the Chevron Championship this week, the first women's major. Interesting point here. So at the Chevron Championship, the winner of the tournament typically jumps in a body of water after they win the tournament. Well, this week, it's at a tournament where the body of water that they jump into is fresh water. There's snakes, alligators. So the women are a little, this tradition has been going on since 1994. They're a little weary. So apparently the golf course has set up some nets. They've got an area coned out for them to jump into, but I don't know. If you win that tournament, are you jumping into snake gator water? We shall see.
Absolutely. I'm not. I don't know. That would be something. But we'll be interested to see. I ain't going in there. Are you?
I'm jumping in. But we'll see. I mean, if I got to wrestle a gator, I'm making sure I got a team. I got to make sure I got a team of people around me protecting me, but also it's the Zurich Classic this week, a team event at New Orleans. It's kind of a down week on the PGA Tour. It's not really a great one to follow, obviously, different style. There's some fun team, Siwoo Kim and Tom Kim and Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele together. So there are some names to watch. But Justin, it's been an absolute pleasure. The conclusion of episode 56, season 3. Guys, if you're not following, make sure you follow all the new content coming on socials. Hopefully you guys are leaving 5-star reviews on the podcast. And Justin, my man, it's been a pleasure.